It's been excluded from the dictionary of mainstream media commentary. We're not dealing with a transitional government in which neo-Nazi elements integrate the fringe of the coalition. The cabinet is not only integrated by the Svoboda and the right sector. The two main neo-Nazi entities have been entrusted with key positions that grant them de facto control over the armed forces, police, and national security. The majority of the portfolios, the Svoboda neo-Nazi leader, Ola Tayan, it's going to struggle with this one, Taya Boyk, Tayan Nibok, Tai Anibok, Ola Tai Anibok is the neo-Nazi leader of the Svoboda Party. Members of the Svoboda Party and the right sector occupy key positions in the areas of defense, law enforcement, education, economic affairs. Look at this guy. Huh? He looks handsome, doesn't he?
Oh, man.
There's him with the Undersecretary of State for something. A picture of him with John McCain in here, too, down there a little bit farther. It's fun, though, isn't it? They're fun people. I guess it's a popular thing.
I mean, how long has John McCain been a senator in the state of Arizona?
132 years.
So you got to think he's gotten really good at pandering to neo-Nazis.
No, it's his, it's his constituency. No, absolutely. Andriy Paruby, co-founder of the neo-Nazi Social National Party of Ukraine, was appointed the Secretary of National Security and National Defense, a key position which oversees the Ministry of Defense, Armed Forces, Law Enforcement. It is formally headed by the President. While it is formally headed by the President, it is run by the Secretariat with a staff of 180 people. Paruby was one of the main leaders behind the Orange Revolution of 2004. His organization was funded by the West. He is referred to by the Western media as the commandant of the Euromaidan movement. Andriy Paruby, together with party leader Ole Tayanibok, is a follower of the Ukrainian Nazi Stephen Bandera, who collaborated in the mass murder of Jews and Poles during World War II. In turn, Dmytro Yarosh, the leader of the right sector delegation in the parliament, has been appointed Paruby's deputy secretary. Yarosh was the leader of the brown shirt neo-Nazi paramilitary during the Euromaidan's protest movement. He has called for disbanding the party of the regions and the Communist Party. The neo-Nazi party is also controls the judicial process with the appointment of Ole Magnitsky of the, there's all these people. It doesn't really matter. There's a bunch of neo-Nazis over there in the Ukraine. And apparently we gave them money. And so a couple minutes after the hour of one right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Apparently yet again. But that makes, I guess that kind of makes sense. I mean, if we're kind of reigniting the old-fashioned Cold War, I mean, the Russians are the communists and the Americans are the kind of supporting the fascists a little bit, because fascists are anti-communists. But it is a little spooky to see pictures of these people. I'm getting this off of globalresearch.ca, which is a very interesting website. Global Research, the Center for Research on Globalization. The article entitled "The U.S. Has Installed a Neo-Nazi Government in Ukraine" is an article written by Professor Michelle Chasudovsky, who I believe is the editor of the site. He's a very interesting character, professor of economics from, I believe, the University of Toronto, but always has an interesting take on the world. You can see that article and a lot of other information on the Ukraine on that website, globalresearch.ca. So clearly the games continue on.
Did you see the UN report that identified 30 drone strikes that require public explanation?
I didn't. Like, the public has to explain them, or the government?
Oh, they require public explanation.
They require the public to be explained what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Who should we have explain that to the public?
The press secretary.
Jay Carney?
Sure.
I think, don't you think it'd be fun if we got George W. Bush to kind of just give a simple man's explanation?
He's busy.
Well, I know he's doing a lot of painting.
No, he's... You didn't hear about his veterans center?
I didn't. What is he? Is he working at his own veterans center?
Yeah. He did an infomercial earlier this week where he had to stop and wipe the tear out of his eye.
Sure.
Thinking about all the veterans that died in Iraq. And so he's building the George W. Bush Veterans Home somewhere in North Texas, I believe.
Well, I think in between that, he could do a little 30-second explanation for why we use unmanned aerial vehicles to destroy Afghan wedding parties. In just some plain English. He could tell us about how we have to smoke them out of their holes and stuff like that. But it's unfair, of course, to blame George W. Bush for drone strikes, right? That's unfair, because Obama, he kind of likes drone strikes a little bit. A bit of a modus operandi of the Obama administration.
The UN report says that the U.S. must release data on civilian drone casualties.
Well, it's good for all the people that want to know what exactly happened to these drones, because when the UN asks the United States to release information, it's going to happen. Because the United States, you know, the UN's like, you know, hey, US of A, we need you to jump. And the US of A just says, how high? You know?
And the report never officially acknowledges Israel using armed drones. The report lists 7 attacks in Gaza among those requiring investigation.
Yeah. Well, why would you think Israel would use drones to attack the Gaza Strip? It seems like exactly who would want to have drones.
Maybe on a really hot day.
What, to just to do what? To bring forth some refreshment?
Sure.
Eight minutes after the hour of one, right here on Community Radio in the 21st century, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City. I'm Benjamin. If you want to call in, it's 816-931-5534. Excuse me. That's 931-KKFI. And we can talk about stuff. But we're going to take, I'm going to take a really quick break. And I'm going to go get some more coffee.
Can I tell you something before we take a quick
break?
This is very interesting. The report says that operations that kill civilians are not necessarily illegal under international law, but states have a duty of transparency where there are credible allegations of non-combatants being harmed. Because the most recent report, or the most... recent incident, excuse me, was a wedding. I just lost it. A wedding in Yemen, excuse me, where 23 civilians were killed by accident.
Sounds rough. We'll be back in a moment, right here on Community Radio in the 21st century.
The feeling behind this form. There's nothing literal in here.
dreaming man. Yes, that's my problem. I can't tell when my dreams won't come true. In the meadow dust, I park my Aerostar with the loaded gun and sweet dreams of you. I'll always be a dreaming man. I don't have to understand. I know it's all right. Dressed in black and white, you lost in the mall. I watch you disappear past Club Med vacation. Another sleepless night, a sun that won't fall. I'll always be a dreaming man. I don't have to understand. I know it's all
I'm actually a willful optimist, and I believe that, you know, the future is what we make it. We still have the opportunity to make the right choices.
Did you miss Al Gore's talk on climate change in Kansas City last week? You can hear it for yourself on Eco Radio KC Monday at 6 p.m.
What are they going to ask us? They'll ask us, what in the hell were you doing? What were you thinking? Why didn't you do something when you could? Were you watching Dancing with the Stars? What in the world were you doing?
Attention local musicians. If you play rock, jazz, folk, bluegrass, hip-hop, Americana, reggae, world music, or blues like D.C. Bellamy here in the background, consider signing up your solo act or your band to the KKFI Band Auction this April. We will showcase your music for 30 minutes on our 100,000-watt radio station in exchange for a donation of a two-hour gig to the KKFI Band Auction. Intrigued? Call Bill at 816-994-7869. That's 816-994-7869.
You're listening to Paragon Radio. I'm Benjamin, in here with you in the middle of the night. Community radio in the 21st century. 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI is the telephony number. You're welcome to call in. Jesse's freaked out about drone strikes. Just wake up. It means love, man. You know?
They're thinking of us.
Love. It's what makes an unmanned drone strike a drone strike. They're thinking about you, you know? I mean, soon enough. I mean, not only is just about everything we do videotaped, but it's going to be observed by drone soon enough as well. Potentially with lethal capabilities. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Oh, this is Russ checking in from the bunker.
Oh, you're in the bunker now, huh?
I'm still downtown Air Force.
Getting ready for World War VII or something like that? So have you heard any of this stuff about the neo-Nazis?
Yeah, I have, actually. Before I say anything about that, I did want to say that, to answer your question earlier about why should the United States be concerned, it's interesting that the media, I've been reading a lot of media sources, and for some strange reason, they don't mention this little tidbit. In 1994, President Clinton, Brezhnev, and I believe whoever it was in Great Britain, signed a memorandum of understanding with Ukraine that we would see to the integrity of their borders in exchange for their nuclear weapons. In fact, we bought a nuclear missile from Ukraine. You can watch the delivery of it on YouTube. If you type it in YouTube, you can watch the. There's a clip of it being shown delivered to the U.S. And because Ukraine had something like 1,500 nuclear weapons,
right?
Most of them went back to Russia. But I don't know whether this is true, but my wife, who is from Ukraine, told me that the Ukrainian military could reconstitute a nuclear weapon in about 5 hours. I don't know whether that's actually true or not, but she believes that it is. Because they have fissionable materials and they have the technical base to do it.
Well, so there's nuclear material there. Don't want that to fall in the hands of bad guys or whatever. But are we concerned if the neo-Nazis get a nuclear bomb? Are they going to take it to Israel?
Well, I don't know whether. Well, you know, that's an interesting point about, you know, anybody that considers themselves. You know, being a nationalist is like a bad word in the world anymore. You know, immediately you're tarred and feathered with either you're a neo-Nazi, you're either homophobic, you're either, you know. Here in the United States, it was interesting. The Communist Party put their weight behind Obama, but you don't hear much about that. So, you know, I don't know how true all those things are you're reading about. Because a lot of the parties in Ukraine would certainly be nationalistic. Whether they're necessarily neo-Nazi or not, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I can only rely upon what, of course, I'm reading, and I don't have any connection to the Ukraine whatsoever. I've always gotten good information from this global research website. They show pictures of this guy and then show pictures of him with John McCain. I'm butchering this man's name. Anyone can go to the globalresearch.ca and see this article. It kind of makes sense, though, if you have some sort of, I mean, they had a violent overthrow of the government, essentially, depose the, you know, elected president. I mean, who is going to fill the immediate power vacuum? You're not going to have, it's not going to be the Social Democrats. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the people who were in the streets with the batons, with the Molotov cocktails, the people who were violent are going to be the first ones to fill the vacuum. I mean, that makes logical sense. But what the real question is how much of the protest movement against the Yanukovych government was supported by Western NGOs? Because that is a charge that I'm also seeing levied against this revolution, this overthrow, this coup d'etat, whatever we are going to call it?
Well, you know, I mean, that's part of the problem here. Like, I was talking to my wife about this, and, you know, from an outsider's perspective, all, you know, it's difficult for us from the outside, so to speak, to really know what's going on with all these different factions. You know, you talk in the, she was telling me about the Tartars, you know, living, they're basically Muslims, you know, with connections to Chechnya, and the Soviet, Stalin kicked them out of eastern Ukraine, and then when Ukraine got its independence back, they were invited back in. So there's a lot of Tartars living in the Crimean region, and my wife told me from, you know, I mean, I don't know, like I said, but from her reading, they've already reached out to their Muslim brothers in Chechnya for small arms.
Right.
And they, you know, so this thing could blow up, I mean, big
it
time
could,
in
but
the
it's
Civil
just,
War.
I mean, certainly Muslim, breakaway Muslim separatists within, you know, an old Soviet satellite does not have much of a bearing, it would seem, upon, you know, our reality here in the United States. I don't know that there's any indications that these, I mean, because that's always the fear, is that Muslim extremists would get that, you know, nuclear bomb or whatever.
Well, I'm not even
sort of
arguing that. I don't know, but
I mean,
but,
who? That's
well, no,
the real
I'm
question.
Just, well, no, I'm just saying what she told me was that
who
this
do you
thing,
trust more with a nuclear bomb, breakaway Muslim extremists or neo-Nazis? I mean, that's the real question here.
Well, you know, a lot of the oligarchs in Ukraine just happen to be Jewish, but there's a, you know, my wife told me there's a strong anti-Jewish sentiment running through Ukraine. So,
well, that seems to, I mean, that I think is a lot more commonplace in Europe than Europe would like to admit. I mean, obviously the Ukraine being on the eastern front of Europe, but throughout Western Europe, there's still a undertow of anti-Semitism that shows its face from time to time. That I, you know,
well, you know, it was George Soros that actually funded a lot. You know, George Soros funds a lot of the democracy, or, you know, democracy NGOs around the world. He just happens to be Jewish. So, you know, there is a, it's just interesting that,
well,
some of the,
I mean, let's be honest
planet,
here. George Soros is on the level of power and money where he benefits from, you know, political revolutions and changes of, you know, regime, et cetera. I mean, that helps his portfolio.
Well, I'm not saying that's not true, but, you know, it's like here in the United States, it's okay to say politically that, you know, old wealthy white men control the United States. If you change it to old wealthy Jews, you know, oh my God, you've just tripped the hate wire.
Well, it is okay to say that Jewish people control Hollywood, right?
I don't even think it's okay to say that.
Right.
In some circles, you could be labeled a hater. But, no, back to the Ukrainian situation.
This is the interesting thing here, though, is that there are these problems that persist with the way, you know, the way Europe views itself.
In 1933, when there was, you know, famine and, you know, basically, I don't know why there was a famine in Russia at that time, but Stalin confiscated the crops of Ukrainians, and about 2 or 3 million Ukrainians died in East Ukraine, and then he resettled the region with Russians. That's why there's so many ethnic Russians
right.
living there, and he also made it illegal, tried to stamp out the Ukrainian culture. Instead of, you know, like a lot of Ukrainians don't even know Ukrainian, the language itself. It's only now being reinstated in the schools. So there's a lot of, you know, it's difficult for us to comprehend living here because, you know, I mean, my ancestors are from Europe, they gave up their ethnic identity coming here. But in Eastern Ukraine, it's alive, or Eastern Europe, it's alive and well.
Right. Well, and clearly that nationalism is showing its face in several different forms. And I think one of the charges that is being put forth is that the United States is exploiting that nationalism, or at least certain elements of power from the West, from the United States are exploiting that nationalism for their own personal gain. And is that just some sort of, I mean, is this the grand chessboard? Is that the case here? Or is this just, you know, harassment of an old enemy? Is this just, just kind of
principled
antagonism of Russia?
Well, I can tell you this, that if the U.S. comes to the aid of Ukraine with money, it's going to be airlifting in, C-140s, or not C-147s, or whatever they are nowadays, with payloads of dollars like they did in Egypt. So maybe this is a back way of propping up the dollar again. You know, that the U.S. is a safe haven for currency again.
I don't know.
Possible. But no, I mean that's the thing you need to look at is the memorandum that was signed in 1994. I mean that's where I don't know what's going to happen. I mean the.
One would imagine there's still some nuclear material left over. I mean certainly you have Chernobyl, that's still there.
Well, right, and the new containment shield for that's not been finished either. It's supposed to be paid for by the EU and the United States because Ukraine didn't have the money. But what I understand is the Black Fleet that's there, it's pretty antiquated. But did you hear that the Russian troops that are there, they're not wearing any insignia?
I did hear that.
Which is really odd because, I mean, theoretically, you could send in some special hit teams, kill them, and what would the Russians say? I mean, how could they say that you killed our soldiers when they're not even wearing insignia? It's kind of weird about that.
Well, that's just, isn't that old school? they call them black shirts, right? It's a paramilitary force.
It was a compromise. Putin wanted no shirts, so they compromised.
Oh, it just said no insignia? Yeah, there you go.
All right, Russ. Well, I'm going to go back to losing their mail.
We really appreciate that. Thank you,
all
Russ.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I take it back. There's lots of good stories.
Yeah, they're all over the place. World scrambles as Russia tightens grip on Crimea. At Ukrainian base, this is a good headline. At Ukrainian base, standoff turns into circus. Just inside the main gate to the military base, four young Ukrainian soldiers stood in the middle of the road as if somehow they alone could stop what was on the other side.
See, that's so far away. See, right here, this is a great headline. Iowa House addresses gun violence by voting to legalize silencers.
Wow. They're just like, you're tired of hearing the shooting? Well, we'll take care of that. Let's drive to Iowa and buy some silencers. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hello, Benjamin. How are you this morning?
I'm just fine.
I want you to... correct me and tell me if I'm reading things wrong. I thought on Face the Nation that they said that John Kerry had made the statements that if the Russians sent troops in, there would be dire consequences for Russia. Do you hear that?
I have heard the so-called red lines in the sand have been drawn again.
Right, right. And, there's definitely the troops that are Russian troops that are in there, right?
Oh, and yeah, no, there's that's an absolute as well. They're in Crimea, the Crimean Peninsula. So what's going to happen? What are we going to do?
Well, my question is to you. The White House don't seem to be moving too fast. Is there any way that they could impeach Obama and bring Dick Cheney and George Bush back into office? So we could really get this thing, that way they could attack Russia right away and we could get going like we did in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
Is that a possibility at all?
I mean, if we got some really bad LSD and took that and listened and watched some insane clown posse videos, I mean, we could get close to that type of reality. But if we're actually going to get there, I think it's impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, I just wondered, they say they're going to do this and do that, but I don't think they've done too much of anything. And I think if Mr. Cheney was back in there, I'm sure we would already be invading and bombing and things would be going our way much better. So.
I think we'd be better off if Chuck Hagel smoked some angel dust and just got serious about running the Pentagon, I think. You know what I mean? Really want
Thank you for letting me voice my opinion.
Absolutely, sir.
Bye.
Take care. Yeah, get Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense, get him some angel dust. You know, turn him into a rabid, wild animal. You know what I mean?
Well, if you want to, you know, angel dust is so yesterday.
We'll get John Kerry some PCP.
Bath salts. It's the wave of the future.
Bath salts, that's
right.
It's
the wave of the future.
So we'll buy some bath salts off of eBay. We'll get them to the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of State.
John Kerry is going to the Ukraine on Tuesday. This is the only update I've seen.
A line in the sand. I mean, that's precisely what it is. And it, Dick Cheney, we need Dick Cheney back, you know, don't we? Would that make everyone feel better? Get the Dark Prince out of retirement.
He opens up his chest, his heart comes out and makes a speech.
You know, he doesn't have a heart.
No, he does. It was on 60 Minutes. It has a little valve doohickey on it.
Yeah, but it's not like he's got a one of those. It's like an insinkerator. It's not like an actual heart. It wasn't the heart that he was born with.
Did you ever play Operation?
That shriveled up and died a long time ago. Yeah, I played Operation before. Were you any good at it?
I don't remember, but I remember the heart, and it's similar to that.
Yeah. Oh, G7 nations suspend planning for Russian summit. They might do that. They might kick Russia out of the G8. I mean, the way this article is written, they already have. It says G7 nations. Oh, U.S. prepares tough response for Russia over Ukraine. Do you think this means that Obama will take his shirt off? That'd be awesome. I mean, see, this is what we need. I think the previous caller's right. I mean, we get Chuck Hagel and John Kerry, get them a little wet, get the president smoking some bath salts. You know, the press conference
get
starts.
Get him on the courts.
Like, Jay Carney's out there, and then all of a sudden Obama just comes out of, like, you know, from behind the curtain. He's like, get out of here, dude. And he starts, like, you know, just growling, just screaming a little bit, and then rips his shirt off.
The best counter video to Russia, to Putin's chopping firewood video, would be Obama playing basketball on a basketball court with chain instead of net. Smoking a cigarette.
Are you saying an urban basketball court?
That's what I was saying. Smoking cigarettes.
With a chain net.
I don't know what y'all call that in the Midwest, but
I don't know either, but what is this, an after-school special?
Mm-hmm.
Well, made for TV.
Where I come from, we call it close to a White Castle.
So he's playing basketball and smoking a Marlboro.
Maybe even eating a White Castle.
Is he wearing a shirt?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah, because if we're going to get serious, we really need to show the president bare-chested.
Or maybe at least with some, like, you could see.
I mean, you know how much.
You could see his sculpture, but it would be an Under Armour, like, tight-fitting.
I mean, just think about that. How many pictures
Lycra
of Joe Biden are there out, you know, just circulating around bare-chested? There's a lot. I mean, just look up Joe Biden Google images. I mean, half of the hits that come back are going to be Joe Biden bare-chested. I mean, maybe that's, I mean, a lot of people have questioned his, you know, his viability as vice president. I mean, we're 5 years into this thing, working on six. I mean, I'm starting to understand why. He's got some qualities of strength. You know, Western powers on Sunday prepared a tough response to Russia's military advance into Ukraine. A tough response. Oh, the crisis may prove to be a game changer for Barack Obama's national security policy. The ill will and mistrust could also spill over into two other global security fronts, Syria and Iran. Yeah. World War something coming up. Oh, Vladimir Putin gave no indication that he would heed the West's warnings. Hundreds of armed men surrounded a Ukrainian military base in Crimea. In Kiev, Ukraine's capital, Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk alerted allies that we are on the brink of disaster. I really should have practiced pronouncing these Ukrainian names before the show started. Mm-hmm. I'll have to remember to do that next week. I mean, it's frustrating when we, you know, find ourselves in the middle of an international crisis, and we really have to struggle to pronounce these people's names. Not that it means anything. I mean, do you need to know? I mean, these people are, you know, do you know anyone named Arseny? It looks so close to Arsenio. You know what I'm saying? It's very, very close, but it's not quite there. Senior Obama administration officials say they believe Russia now has complete operational control over Crimea and has more than 6,000 forces in the region. Oh my God, they have control of Crimea. I mean, what does this mean? What's Crimea's main export? What are we going to lose out on here? I mean, brightly decorated scarves. I mean, that's, again, what is the big problem here? Let's get isolated like it's 1905. KKFI, if you'd like to call in. I don't think we should talk about Russia anymore.
There's lots of local stories.
Shoot.
Well, so earlier this week, the Supreme Court on Tuesday, in the case Fernandez versus California, the court broadened the power of the police to conduct warrantless home searches, but the most important thing was that the courts now have the power to seize your assets prior to your conviction.
There you go.
Apparently that's a new thing in the American justice system. That's right on par with the other story that the LAPD recently sent. Hold on here. Just had it. They recently sent a team to Israel to purchase some new kind of drone. I'm trying to find it right
here.
Yeah,
come on, guy.
Here we go. Right.
Get them out of it.
But the company that the LAPD has been buying their intelligence analysis programs from is a Silicon Valley firm, Palantir, which is partially funded by InQtel, which is the Central Intelligence Agency's venture capital firm. It's just data mining software.
Okay.
You're not really scared of that stuff. I hate all that homeland surveillance stuff.
I'm not afraid of it.
Well, you are, but I know sometimes you're really concerned about, you know, Russia. There's so much stuff every week I see another story that has to do with either some kind of illegal surveillance, or in this case with the Supreme Court, illegal seizure of assets. So that kind of does away with the whole innocent until proven guilty thing that we've come to love.
Oh my God. Didn't the Patriot Act do away with that? I mean, the Constitution of the United States is clearly just a document that people like to hold on to feel better about themselves. But it's a historical document. It's not a contemporary document anymore. People like to talk about the principles, like, you know, innocent till proven guilty. I mean, that's so antiquated. The United States now kills citizens using drones extra judiciously.
And if they come
halfway
after
around
someone,
the world, it doesn't matter, they'll kill you.
If they come after someone who happens to have enough loot to afford a pretty heavy duty legal team to go up against the US government, they can just seize your assets, and then you'll have to write a bunch of IOUs. And that just seems like one scenario.
I'm pretty sure they've, I mean, asset seizure and forfeiture, I mean, that's certainly taken place for quite some time. No, it's winter in America, if you will. Our winter of discontent. Huh? But thank God we got Obamacare to fall back upon.
Sure.
I mean, this is the month you have to sign up, bro.
Have you signed up?
What do you think?
Okay.
Are you with the government? Are you a navigator? You see the knife attack in China? A bunch of authorities on Sunday blamed a slashing rampage that killed 29 people and wounded 143 at a train station in southern China on separatists from the country's far west.
Was that the incident that they were calling China's 9/11?
I would doubt it. It's 33 people. I'm not sure what you're talking about. All-out efforts should be made to treat the injured people, severely punish terrorists according to the law, and prevent the occurrence of similar cases. I assumed, when I saw this, that a knife, like a bunch of knife-wielding lunatics, stormed a train station and started slashing people. I mean, 29 people got, you know, killed. I mean, four of the knife-wielding lunatics were shot down by police. But 143 were wounded. I mean, I read that. I was like, people are really breaking down over there in China. Between the extreme overpopulation and, of course, well, the smog. I'm surprised they could find 143 people in that dense, sulfuric mist.
Yeah, I was right. Bloomberg Business Weekly. After train station massacre labeled China's 9/11, a wild search for culprits.
That is ridiculous.
That's what it says.
Are they saying that? Did they use box cutters?
State media.
Is that why they're saying that?
Has already labeled the assault a terrorist attack and referred to the incident as China's 9/11. Although no details about the identities of the individual assailants have been released.
We're going to find out that they were all Saudis. Most attacks blamed on the Uyghur separatists take place in Xinjiang, where clashes between Uyghurs and police
are
frequent. But Saturday's assault happened more than 1,500 kilometers, or for you Americans out there, 900 miles, to the southeast, in Yunnan, which has not had a history of such unrest. I mean, I read that story and I was like, I don't know. I mean, I figured they'd be blaming it on the Uyghurs because they're Muslims. And the Muslims are easy to blame for anything everywhere. But I read that, I was like, man, people are really breaking down because China is way overpopulated and way disgusting. But now they're saying it's 9/11. Did a building fall down?
No.
Is there any indication that a building collapsed into its own footprint? Because that would really seem like that would make it like 9/11 if there was something like that involved. Was there a plane involved? It said it was at a train station. Mm-hmm. Was it a plane station? Did I misread it or something? I think official state sources should take back that whole 9/11 comment. Did you hear that apparently in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, guys are getting whisker transplants?
What does that mean?
That means that for people who can't grow a full beard, they're getting plastic surgery done so they can be beardos.
Are you making fun of me?
Did you get a whisker implant? Can you believe
the
that?
The best
though?
Choice version.
That's always safe. It's amazing that people are that sad that they're doing that. The grown men are getting whisker implants.
So they're getting other implants too.
Like what? In
breastuses.
Breast implants? What are you talking about?
Not in that part of New York City. Probably more in the Tribeca region.
I don't understand you East Coast people then, I guess. I guess it's all about image, right?
It's all about image.
Speaking of disturbing stories, I saw this story. Headline of this story, Somaliland leaders want female genitals to be cut. It's a feel-good story.
Hmm. Cut.
This is out of Somalia. 30 Somali teenagers, both boys and girls, all agreed female genital mutilation is harmful and the practice should be abandoned. But what they really meant, they revealed moments later, is that girls should have their genitals cut, just not sewn shut. It's okay to have your genitals cut, but not sewn shut. It almost sounds like you could make that into a jingle if it wasn't so freaking disturbing what was just said. The students who are part of a after-school club in Somaliland, this is what they do in after-school clubs in Somalia. What happens when you don't have a government in your country, children.
And you missed the pirate ship out that day.
So this after-school club discusses issues like child labor, early marriage, and female genital mutilation. The 15 girls sitting opposite the boys at Sheikh Nur Primary School have undergone Sunna, the removal of the clitoris and the labia minora. They all said it was the right thing to do. Female genital mutilation comes in many different forms. The other form known by the Somali teens is sewing the vagina shut until marriage. Everyone agreed that that should be ended. Certainly the brutal slicing of the clitoris and the labia minora, the minor labia. No, that's okay, but certainly sewing the vagina shut. That's so a penis doesn't accidentally insert itself into the vagina before marriage.
It happens. No, I totally agree with that. I think it should be. I think they should put an end to that.
Female genital mutilation can cause severe bleeding and problems with, imagine this, urination, cysts, infections, infertility, and complications with childbirth. I could see how having a vagina that's sewed shut might complicate childbirth a little bit. In Somalia, the cultural expectation for girls to undergo genital mutilation comes down to sex and marriage. Men expect to marry a virgin. If a girl has not undergone female genital mutilation, she is considered unclean. It's that she is not pure, says Charity Kenya Koronya, a child protection officer for UNICEF, who was raised in a community in Kenya where young girls undergo the same thing. You are stitched and not opened up until the day of your marriage. They say someone who is open, anyone can go in. Have you ever heard that saying before? It's an old Kenyan saying.
I have not heard that.
They say that someone who is open, anyone can just go in. Watch out, ladies. Yeah, this is incredibly disturbing. Got a woman named Amran Mahumadad, who's 40 years old, spent 15 years cutting girls. She remembers the girls who wouldn't stop bleeding. She remembers the infections that set in. After she began attending the Toston classes put on by UNICEF 4 years ago, she abandoned the trade, a profession she learned from her mother, and she was paid between $30 and $50 for the procedure. I don't know if $30 is just a simple labia slice and clitoris clip, And the $50 procedure includes the full vaginal sew-up. I don't know. It doesn't really say in the article. But in Somalia, that's going to be good money. $30 to $50? I mean, that's like an entire year's pay for those people. I mean, this is the problem here. Religion. I mean, okay. It's not about God, and it's not about, you know, the idea of morality or spirituality or anything like that. It's that somebody comes up with an idea and says that it's holy and it's good and, you know, this is the word of God and all this. And then man somehow interprets that to we're going to sew up a vagina. I mean, how do you know what I'm saying? How do you go from, you know, thou shalt not kill, thou, you know, shall not covet thy neighbor's donkey, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not have an open vagina. I mean, how, you know what I'm saying? It's like people, guys start thinking about stuff, because we're really talking about guys. No girl out there came up with a sewed vagina policy. You know, that's not a female. Women didn't come up with that. Women know that penises don't just accidentally slip into vaginas. You know, that, and especially in a place, from all indications that we can tell, in a place like Somalia, I'm sure most sex is rape anyway, unfortunately.
It's quite an assumption.
That is quite an assumption, but I'm basing that simply upon newspaper articles and YouTube videos. I mean, what do you know about Somalia? Have you ever seen Black Hawk Down? Yeah, I mean, it's just, it seems like a rough place. You know what I'm saying?
They're good at pirating. Apparently, that's one of the best livings you can make.
That, or you could be a female mutilation, genital mutilation technologist.
A seamstress.
Or whatever that would be. I mean, just incredibly disturbing. But you see, I mean, this is what happens. Guys, because we are talking about guys generally, because women did not come up with this policy. We start thinking a little too hard about religion. We think a little too hard about what's right and what's wrong. Because, I mean, we all know that women in the Muslim world are treated entirely different than what we're accustomed to in the West, right? And you know, you've heard guys say this before. They know what they're doing over there because they cover their women up. You know, keep the women covered, then the guy can think about something other than sex. That's clearly not true, because they have the women covered up, and the guys, even though the girl's completely—I mean, she's not even showing ankle—he's still so obsessed with everything that he's like, I can't get anything done. Sew her up. I can't do this. It's just, there's too much. I'm having a hard time focusing. You know, I keep trying to count all these sheep or whatever, you know, because what are they doing over there? Shepherding, you know, animals. I mean, you know, I don't, what do they do in Somalia besides pirate? I'm having a hard time focusing on my duties as a pirate. I know that she's covered up, but I need her to be sewn up as well. And then we need to remove all the pleasure centers.
Who are the people that are advocating the sewing of the...
Muslims.
They are. Because yeah. I know that there's been a lot of Christian activity in Ethiopia in the last 10 years.
Ethiopia.
Somalia, that region.
Well, I think that's been going on for longer than 10 years, Jesse.
Well, sure.
But... No, I don't. Do Christians advocate sewing up vaginas? No indication of that, I don't believe.
In a way.
I think the only people that advocate female genital mutilation tend to be Muslims. Does that mean that all Muslims advocate female genital mutilation? No. It seems to be mostly African Muslims. Not Middle Eastern Muslims, but I mean, it could cross over. But this is not necessarily, it's not a an attack upon Islam, but it's an attack upon when simple guys, when man tries to involve itself and starts to transcribe the word of God down for other men. As you would have figured, you know, like, we'll cover the women up. We won't let them leave the house unless they're accompanied by us. You know, they won't be allowed to be alone in a room with a man unless they are related to him or married to him. You know, we'll not even let them show anything more than an eyebrow. You know, no ankles, nothing. Still not enough. Still can't concentrate. So I have to keep it all sewed up, and we have to remove all the pleasure centers from the body. And, you know, just kind of the nature of, like, people just like, yeah, it's the way it is.
I'm confused. They're not doing that to their wives, right? They're doing that to their children.
Right. Who then they will offer up. I mean, it's like this sense that guys are so concerned about the fidelity of their women that they think that if women can get any pleasure whatsoever out of sex, that they will turn into whores. I'm kind of trying to follow the logic here, and that's kind of what it seems to be. Not pretty. But see, this is truly an indictment of men, of human beings, when it comes to the attempt of trying to incorporate some sort of morality into their lives based upon religion that they interpret themselves, and that nobody calls their BS whatsoever.
Or is interpreted for them.
816-931-5534. 931-KKFI. Apparently, back here in America, the Supreme Court is going to be looking at a case of whether or not we should, because death row inmates, and the death penalty has been a topic of current affair for the reason of the inability to find lethal injection drugs. Because the last manufacturer of the drugs that they had used for the lethal injection was a European manufacturer that stopped producing it for the correction industry in America because they had a moral opposition to the death penalty in general. So they've been trying to come up with different concoctions of you know, drug cocktails. And some of it has been met with concerns of whether or not this is a cruel and unusual punishment, et cetera. But now the Supreme Court is going to look at a story as to whether or not you can have too low of an IQ to be executed. A Floridian with an IQ as high as maybe 75 may be diagnosed as mentally disabled and be eligible for getting help getting a job. But on death row, the state says having an IQ higher than 70 categorically means an inmate is not mentally disabled and may be executed. The Supreme Court barred states from executing mentally disabled inmates back in 2002, but until now has left the determination of who is mentally disabled to the states. In arguments on Monday, 68-year-old Florida inmate Freddie Lee Hall is challenging the state's use of the rigid IQ cutoff to determine mental disability. Florida is among few states that use a score of 70 as measured by IQ tests as the threshold for concluding an inmate is not mentally disabled, even when other evidence indicates he is. Simply put, IQ tests are not a perfect measure of a person's intellectual ability. No, standardized tests. They can only measure so much, right? In 9 tests administered between 1968 and 2008, the inmate all scored as low as 60 and as high as 80, with his most recent score between 69 and 74. A judge in an earlier phase of the case concluded Hall had been mentally retarded his entire life. Psychiatrists and other medical professionals who examined him said he is mentally disabled. And as far back as the 1950s, he was considered to be mentally retarded.